right. Anyway, now we're getting into another difficult area, right. I have to tell you. And because Avodas Kecholim, says the Gemara of Vadi Duchon, there's no question that people worship an idol. So now they say, no, so Miyema the Vatla, so are you going to argue that since, after all, it was worshipped as an idol, you're going to say that he no longer believes in it, you know? So let's have a suffix. We don't know, right? In other words, what is Havi Sakim? There's a doubt as to whether it still retains any sacredness in his eyes. Uvadai. And on the other hand, what is definite is what? That the idol is broken or something like that. And so therefore, the question is, which counterbalances? Is the doubt more important than what is what is certain, or what is certain is not considered because of the doubt that's in there? What do we give the greater weight to? Okay, so you have sofeg uvadai, right? You have what's doubtful and you have what is certain. And he follows the system that the Ein Sofek Motzi B'dei Vadai, that a doubt, just to be doubtful about something, does not diminish the authority of that which is certain. That's what it would seem. I mean, this is a favorite statement, right? Ein Sofek Motzi B'dei Vadai. It may have been, may not have been, but definitely right now it's parts and pieces or something like that. So we can assume then that the doubt is not going to counterbalance that. So now they say the Hotanya, the Ein Sofek basically they Vadai. You mean to tell me that this is so? Maybe I can give you an example which shows that doubt cancels out what is certain. The Hotanya, for example, we have the following quotation. It's written, Chover Shemes. I remember we discussed about Chover several weeks ago, that Chover means somebody who has taken upon himself to observe the rules when it comes to eating food, ordinary food, in a state of purity, okay? As if you were eating holy food, okay? So, in general, in other words, a chover means somebody who has learned it enough and he wants to observe everything to the nth degree, okay? We also said that, very often they took a pledge, that they would do it. But a pledge, not a pledge. But chaver, that's really a Hebrew word.
How does that compare with the word chaver?
What chaver?
It's the same word.
The word chaver itself means a friend. Right. When we say chaverim ko Yisrael, but here, this is like the friend society. Now chevra means it should mean society. This is how we understand. So, but a chevra man in Yiddish is somebody who's very active in doing all kinds, right? Somebody who's also very active and always doing something, or is he's a busybody with an organization and so on, right? Yes. So, Heverban. Okay. But Hever by itself is society, literally. Right. Okay. So, now they're going to question it. particularly who's questioning him. And we have to understand, this is Rabbi Yochanan, you know, who questions him. The Tanya, did we learn that Chover Shabbos? All right. Here we have the case of a Chover who passed away. He passed away very suddenly, right? This we have to presuppose. He passed away very suddenly. V'hidiach megovera maleo peros. And he left a storage area which was filled with fruit. Okay?
Fruit.
With fruit. Now, what do you have to do with fruit before you can eat it in Eretz Israel? The answer is that you have to tithe it, you have to give trumas, bishvas, and things like that. Okay? So, a chaver is very punctilious about doing all these things. Okay? But here is the problem. He died suddenly. Okay? He has this storehouse full of fruit. And I feel him ben a yoman, right? And they are even fruit that, you know, he was gathering that very same day and putting it into the storage bin. Okay? So the question is now what? What is the doubt? The doubt would be, did he ever have a chance to, you know, to take the trumas and masras and right. So on from it? Or did he not? That's the suffix. What is the vadai? The vadai in this particular case is the fact that what? That he always did it, right? He always did it. So.
Oh, okay.
Right? So, what does the Gemara continue to say? Hare hein bechesas besukonim, right? So, they still, the fruit, we presume that they have been mitzukon, you know, tikkun. Tikkun means, right, to correct, to fix up right. I mean, this really is to fix up right. Sorry? What did you say?
She's saying
tikkun. Yeah, tikkun. It's the same idea, right? Right. So, we assume then that he took care of it before he passed away. Since he was always doing that, and we assume, you know, that he was very punctilious about his doing. He gathered the fruit, so obviously he must have separated them already as well.
Are you allowed to go from...
So how does doubt overwhelm certainty in that case? It's the other way around.
The answer is, are we going to accept this theory? Right. That's the question, right? Because, as the Gemara says, look, in this particular case where he died suddenly, the vadai, what is the certainty? It says, tevile. We know definitely that when the fruits were gathered and put in there, they were not misokanis yet. They were what? They were what we call tevel. Tevel means untithed, you know, the right, an untithed product. So that is the vadai, right? And sofek asminhu, whereas the doubt is, did he take maisa from it? Or sofek lo asminhu, right? Or he didn't take maisa from it. So in this particular case, because also sofek, right, and you tell me now that what? That the doubt comes, motzi midei vadai. And it literally takes it out of the vada. In other words, it's given the greater consideration than what is definite. Awesome vadai vadai. So they say, no, you can't use that example. Because remember, in the final example, what did they say? They said that even though we have a doubt, but nevertheless, we still say that the presumption is, you know, that he did take the miser before he passed away. That's so
before he died.
This is the presumption. Okay.
Well, I mean, this is the problem with it is that they switch around what is the certainty and what is the
right.
Doubt.
Correct.
So
correct.
The general statement loses its meaning.
This is correct. I can't argue with that. That's why I said this is confusing. It's difficult because it's confusing at times. I mean, what is the suffix and what is the vada'i? You understand? On the one hand, we said what? That the vada'i is the fact that he's a chover, right?
Right. He was accustomed to doing it.
And he was accustomed to doing it. And the suffix is, you know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, right? Before he passed away. Now, in the other say, we say the vada'i is that it was untied and so on. And the suffix is maybe it was tied, maybe it wasn't tied. So, as we see, the two opposite points of view working over here.
One is focusing on the man and his character,
right? Correct.
Normal way of.
Yeah.
Doing another one is sort of focusing on the
product.
Correct.
What does that refer to? What does that have to do with the
idols?
Getting back to the idols. Okay. There's a difference of opinion.
No, as you say, what does it have to do with idols?
No, right. It goes right back again to the question, I mean, with Shivrei Aved Zara, right? Shivrei Aved Zara. Have a broken piece of an idol. You understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. Right. That being the case, what is the suffix and what is the vada'i?
Well, the vada'i was...
The vada'i is that it was an idol. The suffix is, did he disavow it or did he not disavow it?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Well, they're trying to make his hand.
Well, right, no, they're trying to... They set up an argument. Right.
They were making a logical comparison.
Right. It's a logical comparison in that... We want to see whether the principle of, in Sofek, whether it holds or it doesn't hold. So that's why they're bringing now different examples to try to knock down the idea. Right.
Which has the greatest strength?
Right. Which one is the...
Which will...
Right.
Carry the case.
Right, exactly.
Or the
other. Right, exactly.
If I could make an observation,
Both
of these examples, the certainty is the concrete object.
Yeah.
Okay, the idol is the idol, and the bin of fruit that has been brought into the store is the bin of fruit.
Okay. Right, correct.
The doubt deals with the character or the emotional state or the mental state leading to the action of a human being, right? Did he consider the idol as having lost its sanctity and then disavow it, or did he still believe in it?
Right.
Did he have the will, even in his dying moments, to try to separate the fruit, or did he not? Did he lose the will or the...
He passed away. He suddenly passed away.
Right.
He suddenly passed away.
Right. That's also a good point.
He suddenly passed away.
We're going to differentiate.
Right, right.
Well, in one case, you're talking about a boy. The first example.
Right.
The other example is a Jew.
What they're trying to prove is, right.
People are both religious.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, all right, but that's besides the point. The point is they're trying to show whether this is a principle that holds water or not. Ain Sofek makes it a vada'i. In other words, for the doubt, exactly. Okay.
So, Rabbi Yochanan,
right.
he tends always to go for the thing that they really know, the certainty.
Right.
Yeah, the idol that's broken.
Thing.
You know,
the
right.
Truth itself or the statue itself. Never
correct.
Mind what might have been thought about it.
Right.
So
right.
He doesn't give any value to what
right.
might or might not have happened.
Right. So anyway, this argument they decide to put aside and go to another
You've got to be
place.
Kidding me. It's one of the best things we've seen in
well,
all the years. We've been doing this. Really an interesting
right.
thing.
Do they give an answer here? There is no answer.
No, there is no answer. But they divert the argument a little bit.
That's terrible.
They say...
do we go to human... Right, objective reality or subjective will. And they just leave that?
Okay. All right, let's go a couple of lines further.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. That was it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Could be some,
so anyway, the Gemara continues and it says, awesome. And look, in this case particularly, it says, no, it's vadai u vadai hu. It's a question, which is the certainty and which is the other certainty? It doesn't say no. Vadai and sufik, right? But vadai and vadai. What is the vadai? Vadai is asrin hu. The certainty is that he must have taken the tithes of it, right? Kine rabbi chadina chosor. Even in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Chanina Chozor, the Omar Rabbi Chanina Chozor, who said, Chazaka, it's a Chazaka, in other words, you can assume it's a certainty, Al Chover, in connection with the Chover, She'eno Motzi Dovo She'eno Mesukim Etachas Yodei, that he will never permit anything which is not right to be done by him. He's always going to do the right thing.
Ooh.
A chaver. The chaver will always do the right thing. Right. Chazaka, right. If the same thing is repeated again and again and again, so it becomes a chazaka. Okay? So, chazaka, things have, you know, the their presumed worth or action has a presumed whatever it may be and so on, okay? And it's presumption based upon the fact that it has been this way for a long, long time, okay? So we say, however, the presumption is always that he's going to do everything that's right, okay? Yeah. All right. Back to the other worship. Now, v'iboy seima, and if you wish, you can say, okay, meyikora lo tefile. Maybe to begin with, it was not tevel. In other words, it was everything done. But sofek was sofek hu. Now it's doubt versus doubt. Efshad avad. Maybe he did it. Maybe he didn't do it. Get Rabbi Oshaya the Omar who said, "Marim Odom al Tuaso, Machniso b'mot Shelo Kedei Shnei Behemto Achelus V'Tur Min Amase." He says, a person can do a little bit trickiness, okay? In that what? He takes the tua, in other words, he takes the produce into his house, right? Now, if he took the tua into his house, in that particular case, he has to give maaser from it. He has to give, the tithe from it. However, what if he wrapped it in straw? Okay, that's heaven. He wrapped it in straw. He brought it into his house, but it was covered completely with straw, and the straw was used in order to feed his animals, his cattle.
Where
understand?
Is, where is this?
The fourth line from the bottom. Fourth line from the bottom.
But they're talking about an ordinary...
Mari Mother Matu Aso, right? Machnisa Babot Shalom. No, we're not talking, no.
You're saying that the Tevel was, eaten by the animals?
The straw could be eaten by the animals, right?
He would have straw available.
If he would bring in straw only for animal food, he doesn't have to give Maisa from it. You understand? But what he did a little trick.
I don't follow.
No, you don't follow. Okay.
I mean, you're talking about grain, not straw.
Whatever, grains, all types of grain.
About grain.
Okay. Grain.
Okay.
Normally, if a person brings in grain into the house, he has to give Bison from it, okay?
Right.
This is the normal thing, right?
Where's this rule to when he brings it to the house? As soon as he reaps it, he has to separate it.
Okay. The rule in giving Bison is that when you bring it in, when it says Pnei HaBayis, in other words, the presence of the house itself, the presence of the home, where he's bringing it, at that particular point, this is the point at which he is obligated to give Maaser, right? Okay. But what he did was to take the grain that he was going to use for himself, right, and covered it with the tevin, with the straw that he was going to feed his animal.
Yes.
And he brought it into the house. So, under those circumstances, did the Tevua, this is what you have to understand, did the Tevua see the Pnei HaBayis or not? If it was covered, right, exactly, right.
Wow.
Right.
Now, did the people come from the temples?
That is tricky.
To collect the truma?
No, it was given locally. Right, the truma was given locally.
So was there like a tax collector that went around to decide these things?
Sure.
Is that what you're saying?
There are strict rules. Yeah. Truma has to be given, it's a certain amount that has to be given to the Kohen.
Right.
Maaser is 10% that has to be given to the Levi.
Right, but my question is,
yeah.
Does someone come to collect that or to levy
it?
Either the person could give it, or it's possible also, I mean, that a Kohen would come to the house begging for something and you gave him truma because
the
Kohen, right.
If he's covering it over, he's hiding it from someone, not from himself.
Yeah.
So someone else had to have been...
But because of the rule that it has to be able to see Pnei HaBayis, has to see the house, literally. So it has to see the house that it's entering it, right? Okay? So if you do it openly, there's no question that, you know, you have to do it. But here it was covered, and it didn't see, technically, the Pnei HaBayis. So it's a very technical thing, but remember, we said that this guy is a trickster. He's a trickster.
What about what we always read about in the Tanakh, the Torah, about the things that are hidden? Rashi always does this. The things that are hidden from the eyes of man, it's only in the heart of the person.
Yeah,
Hashem
right.
knows what is in the
right.
heart.
Right, okay.
So this seems like a perfect example of this. Now maybe...
You're absolutely right. I mean, the man actually wants to get away with it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. The general principles that you're quoting in Rashi, I mean, is based upon the fact, you know, where it says, Ani Hashem, as for example, you take the, you know, the beginning of Parsha Kedoshim, where you have a lot of things that mention Ani Hashem. So Rashi says, why does it say Ani Hashem? Because it's Moser Lalev. In other words, this depends on your own heart. Right. You have to have a heart. As a Jew has to have a heart. Okay. Okay, I think I'm going
to
stop at this point. Right. I'm losing my voice again.
A lot of discussion here.
Oh, yes, very much so. Okay. So, First of all, let's identify. Tonight is the 22nd, right, of March, in the year 2006. We are continuing from where we left off at the bottom of Aveda Zora, Mem Aleph Amud Beis, right near the very bottom, which is where we stopped. So we have just a few more lines to do, but it's a very complicated inyan. So let me remind you, first of all, what started this whole discussion. Discussion started because there was a difference of opinion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish was inclined to be a little bit more liberal, and Rabbi Yochanan was much stricter. And the question is, they were weighing. When something is certain, as we would say, Vadai, we know what the situation is, right? But if something is a Sofek, Sofek means that there's a doubt about it. So now the question is, if it's Sofek versus Vadai, in other words, a doubt versus what is definite, then in that particular case, maybe there are grounds to say that what normally we would consider certain can be waived because maybe it's not so. Maybe the doubtfulness of the situation is such that you have to consider that as a situation. And it continued for the entire page practically over here, and it will continue yet for into the next page as well. Okay.
Vada
means definite, certain. It's certain.
Isn't that
right.
A basis for the Jewish words is Vada Azoi?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. No question. Avada Azoi. Avada Azoi. Right. It's exactly what it is. And Sofek was also used in Yiddish.
Sofek,
how? Chabagos and Sofek, I mean. That means I have a great doubt. Sofek, no, yeah.
Yeah,
but Sofek is a doubt, okay? So these are terms. My theory of Yiddish is, while it may have started out as German, but the heart of Yiddish is not the German. The heart of Yiddish is actually the Hebrew, the Aramaic. I mean, it's the thing that comes out of Yiddish, right, that became part of the Yiddish language. That's what gives it really the feeling.
But it's
so
such fun to see it come
right
out of the Talmud.
Yes.
And the related, suddenly rings a bell.
Right, absolutely. Right. Now, this last business that we had about the person bringing in the produce in the original straw in order to try to get away with it, we really get a somewhat better picture if we study the Rashi. So maybe I'll start with Rashi tonight before we go on to the next page. There's a lot of Rashi over here. It begins with the word Umach Nisa, which I'll tell you where it is. You see where the line gets longer. Go down one line. Okay? Right. Actually, it even begins before that, but I think that I can skip the first part of it over here and go on over here. Okay. Well, maybe I'll take the whole thing. Ooh, is this a long Rashi over here? All right, so I'll start with the one before it. There's a lot of it. So, okay. It begins with the Ovad Leruki Rabbi Yoshia. Right. Okay. Dichnisa Bebot Shelo. All right, what did he do? He brought in the stuff, right, in its chaff, right? But lower open air bias, and because it was covered, then the produce did not see literally the face of the house. In other words, it did not see the house. So what does that mean? It means that it was not near the house as yet, okay? Yeah. Not only that, but it says, V'yafal gav the tevel, and even though it is tevel, Tevel, remember, means that tithes have not yet been taken from the food, right? And strictly speaking, food which grows in Eretz Yisrael, it has to be, you have to remove trumas, maspers, and things like that before it may be eaten. This applies to fruits, It applies to grains, concerned. It applies even to liquids as well. I mean, like wine, oil, and so on. Okay? So, this is why, if you see a really from Hashkocha for Beres Yisrael, they'll have on the label, they'll tell you that they have taken Trumas and Maishmas and so on from it. Okay? And there's no Chashash Tevel. What is Chashash? Chashash means not even the slightest suspicion that it is Tevel. In other words, untied. Okay? So this is what, from Hashkocha, it has to certify that that has taken place. And of course, you have Rabbanim in various communities who make it their business to make sure, that these things have been taken in order to comply. Even the ordinary balabasta who buys fruits, vegetables, if they're grown in Eretz Yisrael, they have to go through a process also of taking Trumas and Mashmas and the Halb, unless the grocery store has already done it for them, or whatever it may be, the fruit store and so on, okay? And in that particular case, usually they'll have a sign saying that, it has been taken under the vod of this and this vod, whatever it may be. Of course, in Israel, too, you have all kinds of hashkochas. And there is one, okay? The one that is considered the cell that are considered most reliable as the Badatzi Yerushalayim, the Chulchas Am Sofer in B'nai Brak, and several others as well, okay? So, it's what you look for. All right. Doesn't apply to fruit, however, which comes from America, because this, as I said, it's only a law which applies to what grows in Eretz Yisrael itself. Okay. All right. So now Rashi continues. Okay, and he says, all right, the Alpha God, the Tevel, right? Even though it is Tevel, Shalor Opnei Habayis, right? And it has not yet literally seen the house itself. Mitzar ba'achilas keva. So the first thing that he tells you is that you're not allowed to eat a regular meal from this. It's prohibited. Okay? So what is permitted? The hocha, in our case, over here he says, ma'asikinim luhu b'cheskas b'sukonim. Okay? In our case, we say that the last case that they mentioned was the case of a chover, whom we have defined as being a person who is very strict in observance of the law, right? He's taken a pledge, he's going to be very strict. And we said that he died suddenly, remember? He died suddenly. And so the question is, may we presume that before he died, he made sure, right, to tithe and everything else, right? Or didn't he? This is the suffix. Did he or didn't he? However, this is where we stand at this particular moment, okay? We say that it stands becheskas besukonin in our case, because what do we say? We have a principle that we'll find which says that a chover makes sure that everything that he does is done right. Okay, so we assume now that he did take care of it even before he passed away. And we permit, regular food to be taken, and to be eaten of this. Okay? So he says, Ein kan sofeg motzi midei vadai. So in this particular case, we're not saying that the doubt oversteps what is definite. Why? Because the achilas keva b'doraisa lo ashkechidon. Because we find that this business that you're not allowed to eat a regular meal, this we don't find actually in the Torah, but rather this is midrabbanan. In other words, this was ordained by the rabbis. They wanted to make sure that people do the right thing. And so they were the ones who decreed what should be done in this particular case. Right? Stuck on to the day. And the rabbis, of course, believe that the chaver has a chazakah that he's going to do what is right. Right? Avol, however, I have a chazinin le d'marchinhu kodem shirupadei habayis. However, if we see that they start in to pile up this grain that they brought from the field right near the house, then what? Then in that particular case, right, let's see, I have to keep my eye on the place over here, right, yeah, and therefore we know that it has not yet been, the tithes haven't been taken, it's still tevel. So lo naftyesu midei vaday adabas midin kamon. So we say that you cannot say that certainly it has been done, because we've seen that it was not done yet, and so therefore the question about doubt doesn't apply in this particular case. As we said, when something that we know is very definite and we have the evidence, we've seen it, and so on and so forth, in that particular case, we can't say, well, maybe there's a doubt or something like that. Okay? And then, so the case over here is that the man brings it in into his yard, in its chaff, right? Straw, chaff, whatever you call it. The lawyer Mercheno Bakri, and he still has not yet piled it up in a heap, Bagoran Shabasoda, in the structure that he has on the field, right? Because the Meiruachu Gemar Malocha, the piling it up, this is the final action, right? Achnosasola Bias, Hikavato, Lamaser, the Sobo. Or Achila Sarai. And the very fact that now, if you bring it into the house, then it means that you must take Baisa from it. Otherwise, you are prohibited to have even Achila Sarai, even just on the spur of the moment taking something to eat. Kedam Rina Ba'asirchas Ba'alim, and the Gemara of Bab Metzia discusses a similar situation. And here, inasmuch as he took it into the house or into his yard even before he finished the work, so he did not therefore make it yet tevel. In other words, as long as he has not piled it up, so it's not yet subject to the law of tevel and removing the bison, okay? Because we say that the job is still incomplete. The chima hadeh lehu, memorach lehu, besoch habayis, right? Now, what happens if he comes, and now he makes a pile of it, as we said, he brought it in the straw, he brings it into the house, right? And here, he piles it up. So, what do we say? So we say in this particular case, so we say that he did not therefore fulfill the regulation that it's not to see the presence of the house, since he brought it in while it was concealed, right? So in that particular case, what is the situation now? It did not apply, the rule of seeing Pnei HaBayis did not apply, and therefore it still is considered what? should still be considered tevel, but the tevel actually take place yet, because we say that the piling up and seeing the habayis, this is what makes a tevel, okay? Below toch habayis, not inside the house, okay? Yalef Hosu says, but ochlu bishorecha, and so I feel mercha basode, chnisu derech gagos, kapipus, and so on. So now, what do we have? However, we said the third line from the bottom, right? For what reason? Not for him to eat it, but it was in order that his behemoth, right? Kedeshari behemto, that his animal would be able to eat, right? Ufetura minamaser, and also we say that it's not subject to maser. Okay? So, we take a look over here. What does Rashi say about the feed it to his behemoth? He says, the hochi nokat behemto, why did he choose? No, there are two of them.
That's the wrong one.
Yeah. Here, there's one. We're doing Rashi right now, very difficult Rashi. Maybe it's an easy Rashi, I don't know. It's all from the point of view. Right, nice, yeah, okay.
No other book?
Pardon me?
No other book?
No, right. Right. Oh, okay. He has a Gemara over there. All right. And now we'll also in a few moments go on to this one. Yeah, we're on Memalaf Oven Base at the very bottom right now. Only I'm doing the Rashi. I'm not doing the text. I'm doing the Rashi right now. Okay? All right. So Rashi wants to know, why does the Gemara over here say that he's doing this in order to feed his animal, right? So it says, "Lahochi noka behemto, the malchu behemah kachoshev lei achilas harai." He says the reason being that feeding the animal is not considered the regular use of tithe food. Okay, you understand? In other words, tithe food is for whom? It's for human consumption, right? But for animals, it's considered arai. It's temporary. Huh? Tithe. Tithe. In other words, you have to take 10% over here and another 2% to give to the Kohen and things like that.
Right.
Huh?
10%
goes to the Levi, another 10%. Maaser, the second Maaser, which you take up to Yerushalayim and you eat it over there, enjoy it, you know, in a festive mood. And every third year, 10% is given to the poor people instead of going up to Yerushalayim. Okay? In other words, right. Kohen gets 2%. Okay, that's
if
what
it's
they
for
call
animals,
truma.
Why is
right.
It in the house?
Huh?
If it's for animals, why do you bring it in?
Well, he can keep it in the house and then take it out, right? But remember, it's Ma'arim. It's Ma'arim. This guy is a little bit of a faker. He's using a technicality in order to get away with things.
Right.
This is what we're saying. He's using a technicality. Okay?
Yeah.
But like I feel, I see the robot. When it comes to feeding the animals, then the rabbis did not say, you know, did not ordain anything against it. Kidetnan masachas peyah, because this we learn in the tractate peyah. Peyah, if you remember, deals with the laws of what you have to give to the poor people. The corner of the field doesn't really just pay off, but in addition to pay off, then they begin. It's the beginning of a whole series of tractates that are devoted specifically to Maaser Risha, Maaser Sheni, and other things that have to be given to the various people, depending upon, you know, what the law of the Torah says. Okay? So there in pay, it says, Makhila Behema Lachayim Loifis. Achi Imrach Bakri says over there that before you pile it up, then you can give food, you know, to the animals openly. In other words, you don't have to fool around, right? Violate any technicalities. So Alma, from this we see that Makhu Behema Arai Korilei. All right, we say that feeling an animal is considered arai. The ilu gabe odom, but however, when it comes to a human being, that's a very different story. Afal gav telo nimrechu, even though it has not yet been piled up, osur lechol keva, you're not allowed to eat it as a regular meal. Elo arai, however, as long as it has been piled up, even a person can take something just as, you know, as a bite for a moment or something like that. In other words, let's say that we're talking about, let's say vegetables, okay? Of course, vegetables by rabbinic law became also subject to it, although not by Torah, but by rabbinic law, yes. Okay? So, if you haven't, you know, gathered all the vegetables that you're going to take, you understand? You haven't brought them into the house or anything like that, then in that case you have to take the tithes out of it and so on in order to be able to eat the vegetables for a regular meal. But what if while you're in the field a vegetable because you're hungry and so on? Well, that's not considered a regular meal, and that would be permissible even though, you know, the tithes and so on hasn't been taken yet, right? But once you bring it in, you know, then it's subject to it, right?
Once it's set aside,
correct.
Even if you're hungry, you better go to your own refrigerator,
right?
It's already put aside.
Right. And then he adds, Rashi adds, that, or as far as the other one, you know, that it has not yet seen the presence of the house, literally, that's why it doesn't come near the house, right? So, the animal is not subject to that. About Ihu, but he himself, the person, you know, he is prohibited by the law of the rabbis. Right. However, once you bring the stuff right to the presence of the house, right to the house, but you're right near it, then in that case, then even animal food is subject to miser. This is, wow. I don't have to tell you, I mean, this is already a restriction, right?
This is what Rashi is saying?
This is what Rashi is saying. The Hor, the Tadan, because where we learned, Halokeach, Lezero, the Hebo, Potter, but the Bai, Tadidah. Okay, we learned that in a different place in Masach is the Bai.
So
okay.
he goes along with Rabbi Yochanan.
He's explaining. But at the same time, he feels that that's the right thing.
Right.
That's correct. Okay. All right. So we're right back again to the question, right? And so they say in this particular case we have Sovek Moitzi Bidei Vadai, and here again you cannot say that this is a case that the doubt, you know, justifies overcoming something that is certain, that is definite. Okay. So they bring in other cases now to test this particular theory on which, as we said, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish are in disagreement. Next one that they bring in is as follows. They
are
quote
on this page?
Yeah, the last line on the page. Lord Tanya says, didn't we learn in a Baraisa the following? It says, Omar Rabbi Yehuda says, Masem Shifchose Shel. Now we come, yes, we're on the next page right now. He tells a story about a certain shifcha. Shifcha is, of course, a maidservant, okay, who was working for a meitzik echod. What is a meitzik? A meitzik is, Rashi explains, he calls him Gavra Alba, okay? In other words, a strong-armed person. In other words, a gangster, something like that. Okay?
Right. I thought the word
right.
Had to do... Yeah,
oh,
that's a
Mazik.
Yeah.
Well...
A Mazik, that's...
not a mazik, but a matzik. A matzik literally means an oppressor. It means an oppressor. Why is he an oppressor? Well, because obviously he goes around and by virtue of force, he makes people pay guilt or something like that. Okay, as I said, he's a bad character. Tosfos has a different reading. They say Tosefta, you know, the Tosefta, it says Goras there, the reading is not Matzik, but Mosek. Perish Mosek Zesim. Mosek would mean somebody who is harvesting olives. Okay? We have different words in Hebrew for harvesting, depending upon what are you harvesting. Is it olives? Is it grapes? Is it wheat? We have different words for all that. Okay? So, at any rate, whoever he was, apparently he was kind of a shady character, even if he was an olive harvester, okay? And where did he live? He was in the place called Rimon, okay? And what happened? Shehitila Nefil Labor, she aborted, right? And this child that she had aborted, it doesn't mean that she performed an abortion on herself. I mean, it means, you know, that she had a miscarriage. She had a miscarriage, okay? And she threw the embryo into a pit or into a well, but let's say a pit. A pit is a little bit easier to understand over here, right? Right. Vor Kohen. And then a Kohen came along, the Heitzitz Leida im Zohar ibn Keva, and he took a look inside to see whether the child was male or female. Okay? So, here we have to understand a couple of things. Rashi. Okay? Heitzitz Bo. He looked, right? Als Fas Habor. He stood at the edge of this pit and he looked down in order to find out, you know, whether it was a male or a female. And who was he? He was a Kohen, and he was a Chacham. He was a wise person. In other words, he was a scholar, this particular Kohen. And Mora Haroah Hava. And also, he was a person who people came to in order to give a decision in law. Okay? Yeah. In other words, he was a scholarly person, and people, you know, wanted to find out, you know, a decision in law, because there is a very important law that's involved over here. Okay? When this Kavin Lahoros law, Yeshiva Simeid Hatuma Imeitara, and he looked in because he wanted to know what to tell this woman as to, you know, how many days of Tuma and Tara she has to observe. Because if you remember, in another few weeks, we'll be reading a parsha in the Torah called Tazria. Okay? And Tazria begins by saying, you know, that if a woman gives birth, right, the Yolda Zohar, if it is a male, then in that case, Toma Shivas Yomim, right, well, she becomes unclean for 7 days after birth, right? And then she has 33 days of being in Yimei Tahara. She's in the state of purity at that time. Okay. Excuse me. Right. After that, then she has to come to the Beis HaMikdosh and bring a sacrifice and so on. Okay? Right. And if it's a girl, then, right, it's twice as much. In other words, she has to be tummy for 14 days, and then she has to count 66 days after that birth, okay? So this is what he wanted to find out, if it's a male or a female, to tell her, you know, how much she has to observe. Now, from what follows, I have to tell you right now that apparently there was nothing in the pit. He looked to see if there was, but there was nothing there. So, this being the case, we can understand now what happens as we read on over here in the text, okay? Right? So, this story came to the Chachamim, to the sages, and they declared him Tohor. Now, you want to find out, why did they declare the Kohen Tohor? They declared him Tohor because here we come into... Exactly what the problem is. We have a rule that we call Ohel. Ohel means literally a tent. We read about it, as a matter of fact, it's Parsha Shabbos, the Maftir that we read. Sure, for the beginning of Parsha Parah, okay? Where it's written over there, Zos HaTorah, right? Olam Hiyomis Ba'ohel. This is the law. If a person dies in a tent, literally, then whoever enters then the tent, or whatever there is Tomei Shivasyom. It's unclean for 7 days, and then it has to go a whole ritual of purification. You understand? So, Ohel is interpreted not just a tent, but any covered area. It could even be, let's say, an overhanging bough of a tree, or certainly anybody in any enclosed area where there is a roof, or whatever it may be. And even a person who bends over might also be considered as forming an ohel over the mess, if there's a mess over there. And so, also, he would be subject now to becoming impure. Okay, he bent over it. Okay? But why did they declare him Tahor, this Kohen? Because, obviously, as I said a few moments ago, we have to understand that there was nothing in there. There was nothing in there.
Nothing
right.
Visible.
Yeah.
There was nothing visible.
Tahor is clean, or. Right, and Tome is unclean, or right. So they said the Tiaru and they declare them clean, because why? Because they said that where the pit is, it was quite common to find chuldo. Chuldo is a weasel, and bardalais. What is a bardalais? So, bardalais, we have to understand. It really has two different meanings, bardalais, okay? In reality, it comes from a Greek word, leopardalais. And so, if I tell you leopardalais, L-E-O-P-A-R-D-L-A-S, right? What do you see in that word?
Leopard,
exactly. So that's one meaning of the word bardalais. However, it's doubtful over here whether they're talking about leopards, okay? However, they are talking about a certain cat-like thing that probably has, spots or stripes or something like that, that looks like a leopard. And pardon me? Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not saying it was really a leopard over here. There's another passage that we had where it was a different story. I don't know if you remember, way back, several months ago, we studied, there was a difference of opinion. Is a person allowed to go into an arena, a Roman arena? Do you remember? Because, animals and so on could be destroyed. Right, exactly. So, the prevailing opinion was that as a noble rule, you shouldn't go over it. But, if you could possibly save somebody's life by going there, then it's a mitzvah to go.
Would it be
and try to save a person's life. Pardon me? Because you like the animals? No, it's not a question of liking the animals. It's a question, they had gladiator fights. People were killed. Or they would feed people to animals. The Romans enjoyed it. They had a good time watching these things happen. You understand? This is the reason why a Jew was prohibited to go. I mean, this is no machaya, to go and watch people being killed. This is entertainment. Unfortunately. I'm not talking about going into a zoo in order to take a look and see what an animal looks like. You know, no, I'm talking about the arenas, you know, where they actually had animals eating people. I mean, you heard the expression, feeding the Christians to the lions. Right, right, you've heard that. So, unfortunately, probably Jews were also fed to the lions at one point or another. Right.
So, had to have been in there. Not right. By their own volition.
Right. And I have no doubt also that they forced Jews to fight as gladiators also.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, so if it's possible to spare a life, then by all means, try to do so. Okay. So, because they figured what? The fact that these animals are there, even if what? Even if there was an infant over there, it would have already been torn to pieces and eaten up. So that's why there's nothing there.
How's that animal that you mentioned, martyr?
Yeah, a martyr, yeah. I mean, some say, correct. Right, yeah. All right, so now again, what do we find? Look, in this case, we have the Vadai Hitilo Nefel, right? We know definitely what, that she had thrown, you know, the infant in there, right? That's the definite thing, right? And Sofek Geruhu and Sofek Lo Geruhu. The doubt is, did animals come and drag it away, or maybe they didn't drag it away, right? Because Sofek Obosim Le Vadai, right? And here again, by their ruling, you know, that they said that he's Toho, right? So the doubtfulness comes and it displaces, you know, what definitely had happened, okay? So they get around it by saying, no, that's not exactly what happened. What happened? He says, Lo Tamar. Hitila Nefalabor. So they say, don't say actually that she threw a Nefal, you know, that she threw an infant into the pit. Elo Emo, but rather say Hitila Kemin Nefal. What she threw in was something that looked like a child, but it wasn't a child. It was something else. Nefalabor. So they say, wait a minute, how could you say that the whole Leidah im Zochem de Kevahu Kotoni? Didn't we learn that the Kohen came along in order to find out what, whether it was a male or a female child, right? So it says, Chochikoma, so understand that what really it means is Leidah. It's to find out im Ruach Hipilo Ibnefel Hitila, whether it's only something like gas or something like that she threw in, that she dropped, or whether she actually threw in a child. Ruach, some kind of a gas or something or other. Later, Ruach Hitila Rashi says, Velo Teshev Olov Yimeto Vitara. And in that case she would not be required, of course, to observe anything, because all of it, who knows what she, but it was not a child, okay?
You know, I have one question.
Yeah.
All of this,
right.
What does she say she threw in?
They didn't ask her, apparently. Apparently they didn't ask. Okay. That's a good question. Tosfos says, Shaitila Kimin Nafel, right? You see that? The Tosfos on the side over there? Right. Right. So, it says, Sarach Lomar, we have to say, in this particular case, Shenivdak Habor Kodem Shaitilosu Soho, right? That they examined this pit even before she threw it in. Because apparently people were throwing aborted children into it or something. Well, it doesn't really help us very much, right? It doesn't help us much. Okay. All right.
They wanted to know how much time she had to spend, so she obviously was there.
Yeah, no, but the point that he's making, I mean, he's reading notes from the Sanchino over there. And Sanchino, they feel that some time must have passed from whatever happened, and she was no longer available to be questioned. Yeah, I mean, this is apparently.
She was no longer available. Why would they have to determine if it was a male child or a female child? The whole point was to find out.
You're right. I mean, because it's to find out two things. Right. Whether she was the. Right. What she would have to observe, but also that the Kohen himself, did he become unclean or not? Right. Right. Okay. It's a complicated business, right? Okay.
This is a complicated case, actually.
Yeah, let's see, did I skip something over here? V'yim tim tzaleimar. Okay. V'yim tim tzaleimar. And if you should come and you want to say as follows that they felt it, you know, that she threw in, you know, a child that had been aborted, then Leda. You want to find out the Mizochim the Keva, right? The Yibei, same on, if you wish, you can say as follows. Keva, Nishefu, Lubadu, Lismitsuyin, Sham, in as much as weasels, martens, whatever the Bartolus is, were found over there, right? So, Vadai Gravuho, there's no question in that, that they would have already dragged it off, and so on and so forth. Okay. So, at any rate, in this particular case, again, we cannot prove what the suffix, a doubt, give us a reason, you know, to set aside a vadai, something which is certain or not. That's what they're still arguing, okay?
They couldn't tell the difference between the gender of the child. They still have the power of defilement.
If they couldn't tell the difference?
Gender, yeah.
Well, the body would have to be so terribly decomposed that you can't tell the difference between one and the other.
Right. At what point do the genitals appear?
Well, we're talking. Yeah, right. I'm sure that you can tell, right? Right. Right. But usually you could tell. Right. Right. Okay. I think I'm going to stop at this point. Okay. Today is, let's see. Today is the 5th, right? The 5th of April in the year 2006. And this, of course, will be our last session for the next couple of weeks because the next two Wednesday nights are Yom Tov Pesach, obviously. I'll be in New York and everybody will be celebrating Yom Tov. Okay. So we'll meet 3 weeks from tonight in Yotzah Hashem. Continue.
Okay.
where we left off, okay? All right. Now, we get back, actually, to what started the whole deal over here. We're in the middle of a series of arguments, if you wish, difference of opinion. That's much nicer. Difference of opinion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. It all started, believe it or not, with the question about idols. Okay? That's what started the whole discussion. And what happens if an idol breaks? It's broken by itself, according to the Mishnah, right? Then the pieces of it would be permitted for a Jew to have some kind of use of it, okay? What we call Hadar. But this is disputed by Rabbi Yochanan. He takes a very severe view towards this, whereas Reish Lakish takes a liberal point of view when it comes to this. Rabbi Yochanan says, even though it's chipped, nevertheless, he would disagree with the Mishnah and say that anything that has to do with idolatry immediately means that a Jew could not have any advantage whatever, whereas Reish Lakish feels that you can. So this is what they're arguing right now, and we get back now again to this particular argument. Now, if you remember, the Mishnah started by saying, among other things, right, that Esvei, again, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are arguing this point. This is Mem Beis, I forgot to mention it. It's Mem Beis Omid Aleph, okay? It's 42A, and we are roughly about the 10th line over here.
From the top?
Yeah, from the top, okay? All right, so...
The first word on the line?
The first word on the line is Shom. Mitzuyin Shom Vadegrohu, right? That if the animals were there, they certainly would have dragged it away. Okay? All right. So now, Eisvei, another question that they argued about. Okay? The Mishnah says, Motso Tavnis Yod, Tavnis Regel. They found the image of a hand or the image of a foot. Right? So he said, Hare Elu Asurin, these are prohibited. Nipnei shekayosi behen nevad. Why? Because hands, feet, are worshipped as idols. We explained it at that time that apparently they would make a statue of it and use that, that if you looked upon it, that you would be healed in that part of the anatomy which they had. Let's say you had a broken foot, so if you pray to the broken, if you pray to the foot, it would eventually heal. If you took a look at the hand, and so on. That's what we said, all right? I mean, to us it seems maybe a little bit ridiculous, but I hate to tell you that in the Torah there is a somewhat similar business mentioned in the book of Bamidbar. Does anybody recall the incident? Okay. A plague occurred among the children of Israel. Okay? So, Moses was told to do what? To make a serpent out of bronze, if you remember, and put it on a pole, right? And then whoever was suffering from this pestilence, he would look upon it and he would, be healed, okay? In the time of the Gemara, they didn't like this idea, whatever. We have a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we studied, I don't know if you recall, in which it says that one of the things that they praised King Chizkiyahu was one of the kings in the latter time of the first temple days, right? King of Judah, very important king. And one of the things that he did, they say that he shattered to pieces this brazen serpent, and the sages at that time were very happy with what he had done. Because why? People were using it as a fetish, in other words. The whole significance of it, as the Gemara says in another area over there, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, is that the idea is not that you take a look at the serpent and, you know, are you going to be cured? Nor the other case, the victory of the Jews against the Amalekites. What did Moses do? Right, he had to raise his hands. Remember that now? Right. Right. And they said it's neither, you know, the hands of Moses, nor was it the serpent. But what it means is right. As long as you look towards heaven, this is the idea, then, you know, you'll be healed. You'll be helped. If not, no. Okay? So that's what we learned. So that's why I say to the idolater, I can't tell you that it means look to heaven, but nevertheless, he felt, you know, that if he sees something like this and he worships it, then in that particular case, he's going to be healed. Okay? So, at any rate, the Gemara says, how come? Right? Am I? Why? Says Hoishwarm Ninhu. Isn't it a broken idol? In other words, you have an idol, the idol should have hands, feet, a face, and so on and so forth. You understand what I mean? If you see only a foot, or if you see only a hand, then doesn't it mean that it's a broken idol? And what did we learn? According to the Mishnah would say, you know, that if it's broken, then the Jew could make some kind of a use of it, whatever it may be, okay? So he says, "Hotigemar Shmuel ba'inna b'tzisa." So in this particular case, Shmuel explained it as these were standing on a base. In other words, if it was simply something lying on the ground, so we would say it's broken, you understand? But if it's actually standing on a base, then in that particular case it means that it's there specifically, you know, for the purpose of being worshipped. So that's why this idea that Shvarim, you know, broken piece of an idol doesn't apply in this particular case. So again, another example of a controversy between Rabbi Yochanan and the Reish Lakish. It says, Oved Kechavim, this we'll learn a little bit later in the Gemara, Oved Kechavim, an idolater, right? Mevatel Avedas Kechavim Shalom. He can nullify the sanctity of his idol, right? Michel Chaveiro, and also that of his fellow idolater. His fellow idolater has also an idol, and let's say this guy, number one, he chips it off or something like that, or it breaks or something like that. Particularly if it breaks by itself, you say, what kind of an idol is this, right? I know if you remember that Shalom Shal Chaveiro over there, it says that, Rashi says, Ben Sheshnehen Ovdin Le'ira Achas, Ben Shezeh Oved Le'for'or, Le'zeh Le'markos. It makes no difference, according to Rashi, whether they both worship the same idol or whether each one is worshiping a different idol. Okay? Because on the day Bitul, we discover, you know, that by nullifying the value of it, you know, so a goy has the ability to do it. We had a case where the Gemara you know, the first discussing this, it said, why does he want to nullify it? He figures that if, for example, a piece of the idol broke off, then what? He says, this idol couldn't help himself, so what kind of a deity is he? Remember that?
Yeah.
Right. So at any rate, we say that a goy, an idolater, has the ability to declare the idol as not, you know, as being an invalid idol. It has no sanctity to it. Okay, the Yisrael, but a Jew ainu mevato b'zchachem shel oved kichavim. The Jew, however, cannot go over to an idol, break off a piece or something like that, you understand, and say, I hereby declare that this idol has no value, whatever. To me, it's a little bit astounding to have, I mean, this kind of, but remember, this is going to be the opinion, first of all, of Rabbi Yochanan, and secondly, as we'll see, this is also the idea of Rava, one of the great Babylonian teachers, okay? The reason why I say it's a little bit astounding to me is because in the Torah, Sefer Devarim says that when Jews, you know, come into Eretz Yisrael, right, what should they do?
Smash
the altars, the idols, and so on and so forth, right? So, to me, it would seem to be a contradictory statement over here. But nevertheless, they have a reason for it. Yes.
Know, no. I see a difference, though.
Yeah.
When they were coming into Israel,
right?
They were coming in to take their land, and
yeah.
God was telling them to cleanse the land, as it were, as
right.
they went along. Now, this time, they are living among these people.
Right.
And not necessarily in the land of Israel either. This is in Babylonia, if you think of it. They're not in their own...
Yeah, that doesn't have to be Babylonia. Of course, there was idolatry over there, but even the Eretz Israel or wherever, could be Greece, Rome, wherever it may be. Right.
So it's not like they're going to war against anybody
right.
or cleaning them out of the area.
That's correct.
They're living here, and they are. So this is what they do.
Right.
And we don't. We don't look for trouble, so to speak.
Right.
You know, start breaking their idols, you know, you're at war.
Right. That's
so,
not the reason why he quotes, but nevertheless, I mean, what you say makes a great deal of sense.
Right.
No question about it. Okay. So the question is, why can't a Jew, you know, be mevatel? In other words, why can't he nullify the importance of an idol? Why can't we say that it's no different than an idol which broke by itself? So Amar Abaye, gives one answer. He says, Shepchoso, right? What did the Jew do? He made it a little bit less, but a little bit less in what sense? So Rashi explains what he did. What he did is he took a hammer and he hit something. So he made a dent in it. So now the question is the idol nullified if a Jew makes a dent in it? The answer is no. Why not? Because of the fact that he has not really done any major damage to the idol. You understand? He hasn't done any major. I mean, to just put a scratch or something into it, or a little dent, does not do it. All right. And that's what they say. If he gave a bang with the hammer and he made a dent, so what? Didn't we learn that there is a point of view that says that if you give a bang, even though you haven't really taken away something from the idol, nevertheless, you make it invalid. But who are we talking about over here? If the goy did it.
The what?
If the goy did it.
Oh.
If the goy did it, the fact that he made a dent in it, that has nothing to do with it. You know, even if a little piece chipped off or something like that, it's a result of it. If he does it, then it shows that the goy has contempt for
his own
idol, you understand? But with a Jew, right? Now what happens? So why can't, according to Abaye, say Yisrael Nami Butlo, that the Jew also made it null and void? Right? So he says, but the reason is that the rabbis made a decree not to do this. Why? Dilma magba b'yad Yisrael. It is possible that the Jew lifted the idol. So you say to me, so what if the Jew lifted the idol? But the answer is that we have laws in the Talmud that we call kinyan. Kinyan means how you acquire something, okay? There are different ways of acquiring. We would think that, for example, if you pay money, you've acquired it. It's not true in every case. A person has to have a certain action in addition to paying the money. One such action is, for example, it's called Mashiach, if you pull upon it, okay? Let's say, if you want to sell an animal, okay? Want to sell an animal. Good, so the guy pays his money. It's not his until he's pulled the animal, done something which shows that what? Now
he has
possession of it. Exactly. Now the same thing is, for example, we sell our chametz. Technically, when you sell the chametz, it isn't really enough to just send in a piece of paper to the rabbi. You understand? What you should really do is to see the rabbi in person. This is what we have to do during the next few days, okay? And tell you what, to appoint him as the agent,
yeah.
Right? And then either with a handkerchief or a pen or something or other, you know, that the two of you hold on to, and that shows, you see, that he has acquired the responsibility from you.
We used to do that all the years with
that
wife.
Right, well, this is the way it's done, right? Right.
Rabbi Weinfeld only did that all
right. This is the right way to do it. The other way, I'm not going to say it's wrong, but
they're all doing it. You know the
right.
I can't think of Lubavitch as well, but in the Boston Advocate,
yeah,
they advertise in some of the synagogues.
Yeah, they sent in a little book. And they also had that.
But this was in the newspaper, send the ad into the paper. And I thought it was
right.
A little Lubavitch ad.
Right. Could be. Could
sell
be.
Your comments,
right.
You?
Right. Yeah. So, in other words, the minute that the Jew took the idol into his hands, you understand? He's acquiring it. And the Jew is not allowed to acquire an idol. That's the idea behind it, okay? So this is the reason, right? This is what we said, El Gezerah. This was a decree made by the rabbis, Dilma Magba law, right? And, you know, he was raising. And then, you know, he thinks that he is making it null and void, right? But in reality, he is actually, the idol is right now in the hands of the Jew, right? And we have a general principle now that is enunciated that an idol in the hand of a Jew can never be considered null and void. A goy can do it, but a Jew cannot do it. Okay? Eisvei. similar question that they argued about. Akum again means Oved Kehom Mazalus. In other words, an idolater, right? Shehevi Avonim in Hamarkulis. Okay. What is Markulis? Markulis, you probably realize, it's a version of Mercurius, okay? The Latin Mercury, okay? So, what about Mercury? The Romans would put up statues of Mercury at the important intersections of highways. And as wayfarers were supposed to go by, what are they supposed to do? Throw stones on it. Not as contempt, but this was a way of worshiping Mercury. Okay. All right, so now you have a heap of stones over there surrounding the idol of Mercury. Okay? All right. So, what happens in this particular case? Okay. V'chipo behen d'rochim v'tartios. Okay? The idolater took some of the stones that were there by the idol of Mercury, right? By the way, the idea, of course, being that once they threw the stones over there, technically, it became also sanctified, holy, understand? But the goy comes, he takes some stones from it, and what does he use the stones for? He uses it in order to pave the streets, the drachim, right? Or the tartios. The tartios, the question exactly, what does it mean? Rashi takes tartios in the sense that it means like highways. And you can see, I mean, familiar, the